Hey Al, I would like you to do the intro.
Shut your face, Jeff.
I would like you to do the intro.
Shut it.
Please Jeff. Start right now. Say, hey!
Shut your dirty mouth.
Welcome to This Week in Mormons, everybody. The place where the blah, blah, blah and the points don't matter. That's what you would say.
I love Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Have you watched?
What a great show.
I have not watched the revival. You know it's back.
Yeah, I do. And I didn't realize how important Drew Carey was to the show until I watched it without him.
So Aisha Tyler just does not cut it?
No, she doesn't.
Al, is it because she's a woman?
No, it's because she's not as funny as Drew Carey. I even watched the Drew Carey show, which a lot of people deem as wholly unfunny. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it.
Well, you're also... Folks, Al is also a huge news radio fan, so he's a very big fan of mid to late 90s sitcoms.
I own every episode of news radio. A lot of you might watch it on the CW doing reruns, but guess what?
Isn't it on?
I paid money for them.
It's on Netflix, though, now, isn't it?
News radio?
Yeah,
no.
I thought it was.
You wish.
I do wish, because then I could understand what you care about, because any show with Andy Dick, I have a hard time with.
Yeah, Andy Richard is a hoot.
But Phil Hartman, I miss like I've never missed anyone before.
Oh, they're great. Joe Rogan, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't even know he was a part of that.
He's wonderful.
I'm typing in.
So Jeff, how are you?
I am super.
Don't mock my stutter, and I am so excited to be talking to you today.
I am fine. It's been great. Labor Day was very nice. It was chill.
And what sort of labor did you do for Labor Day?
Very little. We had a busier front. We had kind of a front-loaded weekend, so Labor Day...
Seems like a waste of a Labor Day, Jeff,
in
if
a
you
way.
Don't do any labor.
Well, this was the day I rested from my labors, you see.
No, it's the day you get off from your other labors.
Friday,
so you can do real labor.
Friday I just kind of left work at noon, and we saw the butler, which was stupid, basically.
With President Obama and Oprah Winfrey?
I wish Obama would have been in it, and I was actually at the end hoping for an Obama cameo, but I knew I would have heard about it by this point.
He would just like leaned into a frame and winked?
Because, you know, angry Republicans would have already been crying foul.
Oh, Rush Limbaugh would have just
We would have known. It was an okay movie, but it really just thumps you over the head with its message. It's one of the least subtle films I've ever seen. It makes 42, the other movie. Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, the Jackie movie. Chan movie.
The Jackie Chan movie, Rumble in the Bronx. It makes that one look like a subtle exercise in art house drama.
42, the Jackie Chan movie, Rumble in the Bronx. That classic Asian hit.
So, you know, so I understand the message. When I watch things like this, it's very upsetting to me to realize.
What was the message?
Racism is bad. And Ronald Reagan was a racist. That's basically what I took from the film.
Ron was a racist?
No, I don't really think he was, but that's the way they decided to portray him. They decidedly portrayed Republican presidents, for the most part, in negative lights, except for Eisenhower, who was played by Robin Williams. The casting of the presidents was very strange. Very, very odd choices. I don't know.
I like Robin Williams.
Yeah, but as Eisenhower and Liev Schreiber was LBJ, and John Cusack is Nixon, and the better yet, Professor Snape is Reagan? What's that all about?
Professor Snape was in it?
Yeah, Alan Rickman plays Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, that's a weird casting call.
The whole thing was very, very strange to me. But
you should have got McGonagall to be Reagan.
I would have much preferred her. Or Gary Oldman would have been fine.
Yeah, put Dumbledore in there, right? I mean, Dumbledore and Reagan, there are a lot of parallels there.
Al, Reagan is not gay.
No, but he is all-powerful.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's Reagan.
He's the Jesus of the Republican Party.
In many senses, yes. I mean, we will never
I'm
see...
I'm Reaganing.
We will never see him again, and yet we will always aspire to the levels that he achieved. That's right,
like
folks.
Jack Donahue.
We'll say it. Jack Donaghy.
Donahue.
We'll say it on this show. This Week in Mormons has decided that Ronald Reagan is the greatest president in American history.
Hear, hear.
Just
hear,
as
hear.
Stephen Harper is the greatest prime minister in Canadian history.
Well, he's still a prime minister,
and just
so
like
insignificant.
That, and that Rudd fella is the greatest prime minister in Australian history.
Again, Australian politics, insignificant.
Not insignificant to our many Australian listeners, whom we love and cherish.
Let's be honest, Jeff. If you were in Australia, you would look at your prime minister and say, yeah, he hasn't done anything. Still insignificant.
I would look at my prime minister and expect him to invade Indonesia.
What would Australia do with an Indonesia?
Many things. Grow lots of bananas. enjoy the biodiversity.
We declare war and drive these banana prices back to a reasonable sum.
Petrochemicals, increase their Muslim population.
69 cents a pound, even with the deflation. This is ridiculous, people.
Is that your Australian accent? Because that was awesome.
That's my Australian prime minister.
If 69 pounds... with your whatever. That was great, Al.
Now, Theo, Vanessa.
Don't make fun of my Theo. Point is, my Labor Day was not as fun as your time because you were in Hawaii. But I had good times. My wife had a friend in town, so we got to hang out with them a bit. Ran a lot of errands on Saturday. Very exciting. This is marriage.
Your life blows,
no,
Jeff.
No. It was fine, honestly. It was just kind of a front-loaded Labor Day because we were pretty busy Friday afternoon. Plowing all the way through Sunday. And that was it.
Let's talk about what my Labor Day
was. I would love to hear
like,
more
Jeff.
About you and your exciting.
I flew to Hawaii. I surfed
life.
Every day. I frolicked in the waves in the ocean. I ate garlic chicken.
Yeah.
Lunch plates.
You mentioned the garlic
I
chicken
had
last
chocolate
week.
Chocolate jalapeno pie multiple times.
Did you have Pog?
I had a Ted's Bakery banana cream pie. I had Pog. Mm-hmm. I had Malona bars, both melon, strawberry, and mango. Mm-hmm. Jeff, my life rocked.
Did you go to a shrimp truck?
Of course I did. Okay. Giovanni's and Ted's Bakery shrimp. Delicious. Now, here's where it got really bad, though. Then I had to fly home.
Mm.
I flew back to the mainland. 6:30 at night, I landed on Sunday afternoon. Then I had to drive back. Well, because we got a trip out of Vegas for super cheap, and so then we road trip down to Vegas from Salt Lake, and I had to return then to Salt Lake. So we drove all night, got home by like 5 o'clock ish. It's kind of ridiculous. And then I had my Labor Day festivities all that day.
Of course,
I'm not one to just while away my time running errands.
And how did
home.
You festivate?
Well, we had a big waffle breakfast.
Oh, good.
And then hung out with my brothers. And then I flew to Kansas City.
Mm.
Well, once arriving in Kansas City, again, I had a second overnight working fest.
Mm-hmm.
Doing more computery things. And then I worked all day yesterday. Then finally went to sleep last night. At 10 o'clock, I was exhausted. You and I were chit-chatting. I go to sleep at 10 o'clock, wake up at midnight, wide awake. I'm still in some weird time zone. I think I'm in Indonesia time zone right now. Hello from Indonesia. Then I fall asleep again at 6 o'clock this morning, wake up at 7:30. I'm back in the game. I feel like a middle-aged woman with an insomnia right now. I feel like I am a postpartum depression / insomnia bout going on in my body as I try and figure out which time zone and how long I'm supposed to be sleeping because I have no idea.
Well, at least you have your cats, so.
Declawed cats, Jeff.
I don't think you know what postpartum depression is either.
I'm just mixing them
together.
I think
you meant to say menopause.
Jeff, no.
Do you know what both of those things are? I would like you to define them for me right now, individually.
Menopause is the no more babies syndrome.
Okay.
And postpartum depression, the depression one gets following your pregnancy.
As in following the birth of a child?
Yeah, that's the one.
And what
guess what pregnancy means, Jeff?
What are the symptoms when said pregnancy is over?
Well, insomnia added to depression means that you just wander around at night like I did, Jeff, watching movies and doing, well, I didn't even do my dishes. I just thought about doing my dishes. This is exactly the symptoms.
Did you have a desire to throw a baby out the window?
Had I had a baby, I would always have.
And
that
I know
desire,
you didn't
Jeff.
Do your dishes because you unwittingly left a bowl of ice cream and dried milk, and now your entire apartment stinks.
No, it stinks only because I went and got a glass of water and disturbed the precious ecosystem that existed there.
You ruptured the bubble of...
I really did, and my Scentsy candle is—it's like throwing a glass of water on a burning barn. It was just like flip that Scentsy on, nothing. It's not doing anything right now. This is why having two apartments. A lot of people are like, "Ooh, fancy, two places to live." No, because when you eat a bowl of ice cream and you think, "Oh, I'll get it in the morning," and then you fly out. Unwittingly leaving a stink bomb in your kitchen.
But you knew you were leaving in the morning.
Jeff, I never know when I'm leaving. My phone buzzes 2 hours before I take off, and I go to the airport.
Uh-huh. Even in Missouri?
Yes.
It's like an hour drive just to get to the airport.
That's why it buzzes 2 hours, Jeff.
Interesting.
2 hours.
Interesting. Very, very good. Well, I'm sorry your life is difficult. And that you clearly need a woman to look after
Jeff,
you.
Jeff, I'm sorry that my life is so much better than yours.
Is it, though?
While you're busy running errands, I'm busy being awesome.
I'm busy being married to a wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Where's your wife, Al? Where is she?
Heaven.
Show her to me. So she hasn't been born yet?
She's dead.
She died?
Yeah, I missed my boat. I'm gonna get her on the flip side.
I think we could still do a little Can't we still do some sealing after the fact? Isn't that allowed?
Stealing?
Sealing.
Oh, sealing.
When one goes to the house of the Lord.
Okay, that'd be just pick a random woman.
By the way, we don't have to talk about it a ton, but I know that you saw the new Temple film finally in Hawaii.
Yeah. So we went while we were out in Hawaii. I went and saw because I haven't seen the Hawaii Temple since they redid it, and so that was fun to be back in there.
Do you still get to awkwardly walk by the baptismal font when you're going up to the
room? They changed that around, so now you have hallways and stuff.
What a bummer. I actually liked that. It was so funny.
Actually, closing a lot of that stuff off left me disoriented. I worked in the temple while I was going to college, and so being able to go back there, I expected to just jump right back in and know where everything was.
By the way, if I can interject, when I went out there when you worked at the temple, you know, I went and did some work there. I think I did initiatories and a session. And as much as I, you know, Al, I revere you, have a great spiritual side. I know you take that stuff that stuff seriously. But for listeners of the show, you can imagine how there's kind of a silly, sly smile that goes on when I'm sitting there in the temple and this goofball Al that I hang out, who runs off at the mouth all the time, is just, you know, helping officiate in temple ordinances. And I'm... You have to see people through different lenses at certain times.
Your testimony was shaken to the core, Jeff. Is that what you're
getting at? It wasn't shaken to the core. It reminded me that anyone can overcome iniquity.
I was the adulterous woman in your eyes.
But anyway, so sorry. Continue on about your temple time.
No, I don't know what else we're talking about. The temple video. And so we got to sit down and see it. And I sat through the entire thing just slack-jawed. I was so enamored by this new video. I loved it. I thought it was great. Just having a little bit of variety to what we're so used to seeing was fabulous. It was so great for me to sit through that. I had tons of new thoughts and ideas. For the first time in a long time, just because this is a lazy man's solution, but it was so nice to come away feeling like I had new ideas and learned something new from the temple because... Normally, when I go, I go and I'm exhausted, and I'm going. A lot of it is motivated out of duty, which is a lesser of the motivators, and I'm just going because I feel like I should be there, and I like to go and feel peace, and so I just go and feel good about life. But to come away feeling like I was educated in the ways of the gospel was just wonderful.
Well, that's the best because so often we have to really, you know, we all have those moments when I really have to will myself to go to the temple because I know that after I leave, I'm going to be much happier. I mean, there have been times when I say, when I so want to call it off and do something else, but I know that's the adversary working against me because I get out of the place and I say, hey, life is good. I'm glad I spent a couple hours in here.
If I may, I'd like to plug our Sunday school or our gospel study session.
You may commence. I shall grant it to the man in the front. Yes.
The daily email we're pushing out, it's just an excuse for us to sort of revisit some topics that we know well, and we're trying to ask interesting questions that cause us to think about some of this stuff and just in a very introspective way.
Did you call it Sunday School Bonanza?
No.
Okay.
Sunday or our gospel study session.
That's what it is. Yes.
And so just an excuse to sort of write through some of these thoughts and ideas and read through some references. It's been cool for me to focus on a topic for a week and actively, I mean, open and engage these emails has been really good. And it's continuing to grow. We appreciate everybody that signed up and sharing it with your friends. Keep it up.
And you can sign up if you don't know what we're talking about. Go to thisweekinmormons.com, left sidebar, sign up for our email list, check the box that says you want to be part of Gospel Study Sesh. And you'll get stuff. Be careful, though, Al. You did say study a topic for a week, and we decided to not limit ourselves.
Oh, we're changing it up. We change it up.
But there's a period that we do a topic. We don't announce in advance how many days I'll be on a certain topic. We just go for it as it works. But so far, we've talked about the plan of salvation. And, of course, when everyone's hearing this, we'll have finished up the nature of God. And if you're tuning in, I believe we're going to be talking about, did we decide on the priesthood will be our next topic?
Yeah.
Is that the consensus?
Sure will.
Yeah. So sign up for that, folks. You'll enjoy it. It's been rewarding. We appreciate all of your comments, those of you who have been participating. It's wonderful.
It's been wonderful. Anyway.
Well, lots of other Mormon news other than the things that are facing us individually. There's a lot bigger stuff going on. A lot of big things going on. And I really want to lead off, I guess, on the sad front. Missionary deaths. More and more of them. It keeps happening. We've had two already in September, and we're barely into the month.
What happened in September?
Okay,
what
do I have? Okay, one elder in Colombia, I believe he was a Dominican elder in Colombia, his name was Jose Daniel Encarnacion Montero, was struck by a stray bullet because, you know, there in Cali, Colombia, there are just bullets that are just astray. And one of them hit him, apparently. He was with three other missionaries when he was killed, but they weren't harmed. Police were investigating. So he was killed by a stray bullet. So that happened, unfortunately. And then also, there's a missionary. This one's not official by any means, so please keep him in your prayers as long as we're able. But a missionary by the name of Elder Taylor Ward, who's from Vacaville, California, is up in Idaho in the Pocatello area. Or no, he's in Rockford, Idaho. And he's been hospitalized after a pretty bad car accident. He's on life support. They don't expect him to survive. So let's hope for a miracle then, people. But obviously, the situation is grim. So this just keeps happening. More and more. I feel like, and I looked at it. I mean, we had two in August. We've already had two in September. We've had, by my mark, seven in 2013 alone, which is more than the past many, 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 many years combined. And it begs the question. I wrote a piece on this. You can see at the website at thisweekinmormons.com. Because we've had about a 21% growth rate, I believe, in the number of missionaries from last year to right now. But we've had way more than 21% growth in the number of deaths. So this is clearly not just a greater sample, you know. So I don't really know what's going on and why this is happening. But it's disconcerting to me. And I've realized that it's disconcerting, I believe, to the church because actually right before we went to record, the church put out a press release in an interview with the mission.
In response to Jeff's op-ed.
No, but obviously this keeps getting coverage, and of course the church is aware of it. And the church says there have been 10 deaths over the past 12 months. So we had three other ones at the end of 2012. And the church is aware of this. I mean, we've never had this many missionary deaths in sequential order like this going down over this period of time. And of course the church says, you know,
what are you suggesting that is at the cause of it? I mean, is it just like times are getting more like dangers in the last days are getting more real? I mean, what are you
it could be that suggesting? The interesting thing is almost all of these, all the recent ones, have all been because of accidents. People being hit by cars, the one who accidentally grabbed the electrical wire, one had a heart condition. But the point is, the unlike most of the missionary deaths, unfortunately, in years past, the ones in years past back in the day typically involved actual murder. You know, the actual case where somebody stabbed a missionary, shot a missionary. There were terrorist attacks against church facilities in Bolivia, for example. Things like that. Much more directed at missionaries, whereas these all seem to be just accidents with stuff happening. But yeah, why is there a greater prevalence of accidents? Is it people are getting run down with cars? I don't know if that's because Oklahoma and Malaysia both have more cars than they used to. I put out a couple of I posited a couple of ideas when I wrote the article we put up, but I don't honestly know what it could be. It could just be stuff happens, and that's life, and that's really probably the best explanation. I don't think we have mission presidents who are who are overwhelmed with their surge in missionary numbers, so perhaps they're not being as tight on safety stuff as they should be. I don't know, but it's definitely noticeable.
Well, I don't know either, man, and it really bothers me. It bothers me to I don't know, that maybe that's the wrong phrase, but like,
it's disconcerting.
It bothers me that maybe we're not drawing on the protection of the Lord the way that, I mean, why would the Lord let this happen? You know,
well,
like,
why does the Lord let anything happen?
Well, right. But this is the question that you come to. I mean, when you're serving a mission, like for me, when I was serving a mission, I took great comfort in knowing that I was on the Lord's errand, and I expected protection while I was doing that, right?
See, I expected protection, but I also knew that stuff happens. And so I also felt that it was incumbent upon me to go out of my way to make sure I looked out for my own safety and the safety of others. I'm not saying anything that's happened to these missionaries is because of just negligence or arrogance or anything like that. But you know, I don't know. Like, how does one, you get hit by a car, you're probably riding your bike on the side. Like, if you're in Malaysia riding your bike on the side of the road, you get hit by a car. But where else are you supposed to ride your bike? What else are you supposed to do?
Well, and there's a great script. I think it's a scripture. It's either a scripture or a quote from one of the prophets. And I could dig this up if anybody's curious, but it's the idea that if you pass away while in missionary service, your calling continues in the next life,
yeah,
right?
And
so
I've heard that too.
You immediately go in as a missionary in the spirit world, not like that is the calling that
that's
you
a bit of a bummer
on.
Because I would hope that my reward would be great for being a martyr. And
oh, you're thinking of 70 virgins?
Not
maybe.
70 virgins. I would much prefer to be fed grapes.
Grapes.
I would like to
virgin.
Wear a toga.
Man,
just relax.
Togas are great.
I don't know, but I feel terrible for all of the many families and friends who have been affected by this, because that represents a much larger chunk of people than it has been in the past.
I don't know, man. That stinks.
I know, and it's sad because at this point I'm like, what am I supposed to expect a couple of more in September and then see how October goes? It used to be we'd hear about this very rarely. Something would happen and it would be much more news. Could say, oh man, a missionary died. This hasn't happened for years.
So the press release from the church states, I mean, they emphasize that serving a mission is very safe percentage-wise. I mean, even at 10 missionaries out of 75,000
is
minute percentage wise, right?
Right.
I mean, it's the chances of anything happening to one of your missionaries that's out there serving, or if you're thinking of serving, is so remote, it's just absurd to even think about.
But if I can play fear mongerer, it's still a higher percentage than it used to be.
It's higher than zero, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's small, but it is still a greater chance than it clearly has been in the past.
All right, so we got we're gonna move on here. Let's see, the church has released what they're calling introductory videos. Introduction to Mormons is the idea on these. And they've released a whole playlist or series of videos around these lines. You know, the idea being that it's whatever you're trying to explain or whatever you're trying to articulate to some friends, they're trying to do a video to sort of assist in that, right?
Okay.
The idea that they're giving you tools to do your missionary work. So you can share something around service or humanitarian aid or missionary work or caring for the poor. They have all these temples, whatever somebody has a question on, they're trying to put together a video that you can sort of use as a springboard to increase, you know, open up discussion, that kind of stuff. So cool. The downside is it's 10 minutes. These are 10 minute videos. So it's not super short form content. It's pretty short form, but like, I mean, we're not talking 90 second blips. So
yeah, they are very long.
And Clay Christensen's in one of them. I love Clay. Hey, Clay. What are you typing, Jeff?
Hey, guy. It doesn't matter. I'm finding you a wife. That's all you need to know.
You're on Match.com?
No, I'm on UkrainianBrides.uk.
Oh, say hi to Olga. Hey.
No, she prefers Olya.
Olya.
Yeah.
She's a Ukrainian.
Yeah, let's get
it. I see.
Well, that's how it should be. I mean, come on. Let's be honest here. Other random tale here. So there's, of course, a Utah Provo mission, as many of you know. It's located in Provo at 850
Heard
North.
Of it.
850 North, 600 East. I'm trying to visualize where that is. I feel like that's right smack in the middle of BYU housing area. really. I mean, that's just off Center Street. Anyway, point is, the Mission Home wants to expand its parking to better accommodate its growing numbers of missionaries. They want to be able to have space to park a van and a big trailer for luggage when they transfer missionaries and this stuff. But much like the neighbors of the MTC, who will not be deterred in preventing the church from building a tall building, the neighbors around this area are concerned about a parking lot being a blight on the neighborhood and, of course, being unsafe for children walking to school. So the neighbors, you know, they're fighting a little bit. They don't want to let the Mission Home have its parking spaces.
So what happens now?
Well, the mission president will have to appear in front of a secret tribunal, at which point they will ask him to present his evidence. Afterwards, they will light a number of candles and everyone will put cloaks on and hoods over their heads.
Oh, I loved the skulls.
And then when a gong is gonged, I don't know what the verb is for a gong. When it is gonged. Then they will give him his sentence.
Are they going to get the parking, Jeff? That's what I'm asking here.
At the end of the day, you know they will. This is not building a giant building. This is land the church already owns, and they just want to make parking, and the people don't want it because, you know. But given the way missionaries drive, I could understand residents being
They just don't want them there.
A little afraid of that because missionaries drive like crazy. The great thing is, if they have a trailer, can you imagine the wonderful visual of having to back the trailer up when those elders have to stand behind the trailer waving your companion on? I'm almost sad that I didn't get to serve stateside because I missed out on the experience of every time I backed up a car having to stand behind it and guide it out.
Oh,
it's just one of my favorite things to see. The missionaries do. It's funny.
So Elder Ballard this week.
Good guy. I like him.
He gave a talk at Education Week a couple of weeks ago. And a lot of it was around sort of women. The title is Let Us Think Straight.
Okay.
Which is, this is him giving straight talk. Harold McCain
Scared straight. I'm prison Mike. I'm prison M. Russell.
So there's some great stuff in here. A little bit of it is sort of difficult to swallow. So not difficult to swallow, but there's some doctrine in here that isn't pleasant to hear, if I may. May I, Jeff?
You may. I give thee permission.
So some of the stuff that we're talking about, so a lot of it, I didn't even notice this until somebody sent it to me this week. It was like, hey, this is a great talk to read, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I sent it to you.
No, you sent it to me later. I had other people, Jeff.
No, I'm your only friend.
And then today we were reading over on Doves and Serpents, they had a rebuttal to the talk on Elder Ballard and a couple of quotes that they pulled out, which I was surprised. I didn't notice the first time I'd read through it.
Right.
One of them, Elder Ballard says, now sisters, in speaking this frankly with men, may I also exercise a moment of candor with you? While your input is significant and welcomed in effective councils, you need to be careful not to assume a role that is not yours.
Boom shakalaka.
Warden state councils are the most successful are those in which the priesthood leaders trust their sister leaders. the context of this is he's saying, like, don't try and be a stake president. It's not your role. Stay out of it, ladies. You need to be careful and not assume a role that is not yours. This coming at the heels of the current, women want to attend priesthood sort of hoo-ha-ha.
They want to go to the priesthood session of conference and learn all about our magical powers, but we're not going to let you.
Well, we probably will.
No, I get to work on my Patronus every single time, and they, no.
I've had a lot of good conversations around this this week, or just around the whole idea of women in the priesthood, right? I do not expect women to ever receive the priesthood formally in this life. I just don't expect it to happen.
Right.
I do I can't appreciate the conversation though, because I feel like we need to get to a point where that shouldn't be shocking to us to think about though, because as you reference in the Eternities, this is how it goes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you go to the temple and women are trusted with priesthood ordinances and all that stuff happens. And, I mean, they officiate in ordinances and they administer in them, and that's a reality that's happening. And it's not absurd to think about, right? the thing that scares me about being flippant with women in the priesthood is the same flippant attitude that many had around blacks in the priesthood back in the day. And if the Lord came down and said, hey, this is what's going to happen next, we need to be of a mind that says, you know, we are like going to trust the Lord here. So, I mean, it's, well, and again, it hurts my head to think about, like, because I've been very adamant about you know, other churches that have given women the priesthood. It's just kind of a, oh, well, those guys are just doing what they can to gain popular favor, you know, and I've been very dismissive of it. And so trying to think about it realistically now has been very, very difficult for me, but it's something that I feel is healthy for us to get to the point where we say, all right, well, if this happened, you know, there's meaning to it, and we know that it'll happen eventually when we get, like, kings and queens, priests and priestesses, as it says in the Doctrine and Covenants, right? That is how men and women will work together in the priesthood. In your home, that's exactly how it should be. It's not one rules the other. It's not anything like that. It's you work together, you come together, and this is how you do this stuff. So,
but what about, just to play devil's advocate, what about the verbiage, though, in that sense, like in the family, the proclamation to the world that says that, you know, husbands preside over their families and provide them, yada, yada, yada. Wives are in charge of nurturing, et cetera. Now, that's fine. I'm all for the different roles and stuff. But what do you say to that when somebody says, it says right there, husbands are to preside, which we can very easily be taken as I loom over the family and the the buck stops here.
Sure, it can. As the Doctrine and Covenants defines preside, though, preside, and we've mentioned this in the past, preside, it talks about how our dominion will be an everlasting dominion and shall flow unto thee forever and ever without compulsory means, right? So there's nothing in the gospel that would ever force a woman or a family to be a part of a family unit that they did not want to be a part of. And so if the man presides unrighteously, his dominion leaves him. They will go away. They will be given to people that can appreciate them and treat them well, right? You cannot, there's no fear-mongering in the gospel. There is no chauvinist.
No, there's like, there's not, right? But what do you say to a woman? And, you know, I'm just asking to ask. What do you say to a woman, though, who says, yeah, but it doesn't matter even if he's doing a good job. The point is, it still says right there that the man is to preside over me. Even if he doesn't, even if he's got a great attitude about it, you know, if he's fine, he's righteous, he does it as it should be done. But it still says that he presides over me. It doesn't say that husbands and wives, you know, preside over their families together, exercising different roles or anything like that. It doesn't say that. So I am curious what we say to women who bring that up.
Are you talking about a specific reference?
Well, just like the proclamation on the family, husbands are to preside over their families, which includes in this case the wife. And so many do read this and argue that, of course, it means that it doesn't have to mean that a woman is subservient, but in effect, woman answers to a man, that the man is in the presiding role. He is the president of the family, if you will.
Sure. So the verbiage is there to say that like you could read that as a woman needs to be subservient to the man in the house. You could read it the exact opposite way, though, under that same vein, which is really, like, if you take the time to try and appreciate the spirit that it's written in, I feel like that's the correct reading, right? The idea that it's not that a woman is subservient to a man, it's that they are presiding together. And if you read any of the other doctrines in the church, these all point to the same thing of this is a joint effort. I mean, there's a lot of doctrine to support that fact. And just, I mean, culturally, you'll have some guys that just don't get it and believe that that's the way it should be. But amen to the priesthood of that man. I mean, we're told what happens when somebody feels like they have some sort of authority over another person just by nature of gender or by nature of priesthood that they have, right? That doesn't fly. That doesn't work in the gospel.
Well, there we go.
So you could read it that way and feel very, I mean, throw yourself, like, be very kind of pity-driven, the woe is me. But that's not, I mean, that's not the intent or the message of the gospel at all. And so, I mean, if you read it that way, I feel like you're resting those scriptures to yourself.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that's what they were written or how they were written, the message nor the intent.
And here's another thing, and this is because some of these articles that have criticized this talk, what they don't mention are some of the positive things that Elder Ballard does say that are much more progressive in that sense. I mean, he very openly says, "If I can find the," he says right here, "as I say these things, however, I acknowledge that there are some men, including some priesthood leaders, who have not yet seen the light and who still do not include our sister leaders in full partnership, notice he said that, in ward and state councils. I also acknowledge that there are some men who oppress women and in some rare circumstances are guilty of abusing women. This is abhorrent in the eyes of God. I feel certain that men who in any way demean women will answer to God for their actions." So, and it says right there, "let me add that any priesthood leader who does not involve his sister leaders with full respect and inclusion is not honoring and magnifying the keys he has been given. His power and influence will be diminished until he learns the ways of the Lord." So, of course, right after that is when he says what you quoted earlier, that obviously, you know your role in that sense. But we forget that before that, he openly says, look, there are men who are screwing this up, and that's not the church policy, and that's something that we have to work on. Because, absolutely, it is a partnership with the sisters, you know, as it should be. And, you know, it's like anything else. You can take certain quotes you want and then use them in the context you desire while leaving out other ones that...
So if I can leave us with one thought, remember, never be dismissive about people asking questions of the gospel.
Yeah.
That is the wrong attitude to have always, right? The gospel is built around, like, testimonies are built around asking questions and receiving answers for yourself. I mean... encourage people to go to the Lord to seek clarity and understanding. Ask questions of yourself. Don't just trust in, like, man, we have so many instances in the history of the church of, like, culture dictating much of how we interpret prophecy or revelation, and that being corrected over time as time goes on. So don't be surprised if doctrine is clarified, because this is us just men trying to interpret what's been said, and so if women are intended to have the priesthood, this should not be something that we just, like, throw out the window. At the same time, I mean, don't be swayed by every wind of doctrine, but do not be dismissive of other people having genuine journeys seeking truth and understanding.
Exactly. Please. Like, I may not agree with some of the... like the tactics of stuff, whether it's ordained women, whether it was, you know, wear pants to church day, which I still think was stupid. There is nothing wrong with anyone asking questions and wanting to bring to light certain things, just as you said. That's an important part of our discipleship and of the growth of the church in many ways.
Yep.
We can move on. I wanted to comment on the Heavenly Mother thing, but we're running long, so it's okay. I will just say this. It's okay.
Are we? What's the Heavenly Mother thing?
The same thing. People bring up, why don't we talk about Heavenly Mother? Why can't we learn about her? Why don't we pray to Heavenly Mother? And they even make fun of that old sort of folksy mindset of, you know, Heavenly Father protects Heavenly Mother. We don't know her name or know anything about her because he doesn't want her to be slandered and have her name dragged through the mud and be blasphemed and yada, yada, yada. I don't think that's folksy. I think that's totally legit. If you love someone with all the love as a perfect divine being that Heavenly Father is, and think about that, a perfected being, how would he not want to protect arguably the most cherished part of his existence? You know, I fully understand that as much as I can in my mortal sphere. I don't have a problem with that belief at all. And also, if we're going to know more, we will know more. We know we don't have everything. We don't have all scriptures yet. We only have, what, a third of the actual golden plates translated to scripture. There's plenty of stuff we don't have. So we can't sit here and try to force the Lord's hand to know this stuff. Things, as Al said before as well, things will be revealed to us. Sometimes this comes from societal enlightenment, and then in response asking the Lord about things, and stuff changes. And sometimes we receive stuff because the right period or dispensation is going down and more is revealed to us, because that's how it should be.
You know what's great is this is like continuing revelation. Like imagine if we get more scripture revealed, right? That'll only hurt people who have an ego in the gospel, right? The people that feel like they've got it all figured out, the self-proclaimed scriptorians who have, they've answered all of their own questions by their own study, which I know a lot of these guys out there, and these are the guys that are very flippant and condescending with questions and quick to give definitive answers of just like, this is how it is. And everybody else, the people that are genuine seekers of knowledge and understanding, will be totally fine. I mean, you'll be fine because revelation just clarifies and gives more, and it doesn't take away unless you have a big ego. So be careful.
Exactly. Well, moving on. We're already past 40 minutes. We've got plenty more.
Sorry.
No. It's good topics. Another bigger topic this week, a lot of you have seen this drop in the news, the website Given Breath, which uses nothing more than WordPress's standard templates. So I don't know. But
Jeff judges.
I do. I mean, come on, people. There's free templates. You can gussy it up somehow, for goodness sake. But interestingly enough, I think many people think this is a Mormon blog, and it's not. It's actually from some evangelical Christians. But some of the points discussed are very, very much applicable in what we talk about within our own faith, of course.
So this is a modesty one, right?
This is the one all about modesty. And it's a post called FYI, If You're a Teenage Girl, and it's addressed to Dear Girls. She says, I've got some information for you. She says, I have teenage sons, so of course I look through your social media photos, and I see quite a few pictures of you lovely ladies hanging out in your pajamas. Your bedrooms are so cute. It starts off...
Lovely ladies.
It starts off fine, but then it says, but then I think boys notice other things. For one, like you're not wearing a bra. Or why are you...
Yeah, boobs,
why,
for sure.
Why do you have an arched back and a sultry pout? These are not positions that one naturally assumes before sleep. Also a fair thing to mention. She says, I think it's important for you to recognize and realize what you're doing. She says, now understand this. We like keeping up with you, but your self-portraits are unfortunate, and we're going to have to block your posts because it's awkward for my boys, and it should be awkward for your parents. All of these are fair points to make because we want to raise people to be modest, to respect their bodies. But the problem is she goes on, and this is my opinion, of course, just going off on basically how this will adversely affect her sons. Her sons are not in control of their own minds. Her sons, if they see these posts, will be uncontrollable, just madmen of passion. And
oh, it's so true.
And it's fine, but it drives me crazy, and we have this in the church all the time, becoming pornography, all of this stuff. Now, there are important principles there. Yes, ladies, dress modestly and help us out. But we as men, it is incumbent upon us to learn how to tame our carnal selves if we are so...
No,
yes,
Jeff.
If we are so tossed around.
The onus is on the women.
I'm glad you used onus.
They should tiptoe so lightly.
But it's not. And it's really not. And this is the thing I feel passionate about, because it's on both parties. And we so often portray it as, ladies, you need to be modest and not provoke thoughts in the men. That way the poor men aren't troubled with this. But really, it's, sure, do that. Do that. That's great. But men, hey, learn how to control your thoughts and respect women and look at them as something more than, pieces of tail, if you'll forgive the expression. And women, don't just dress modestly and do these things because you're trying to help the men. Do it because you respect your body. Do it because you know that you have a sacred vessel given to you from the Lord. Do it because you know that it's that your actions in society shouldn't be dictated by what's popular on Snapchat. Do it for the right reasons. Make sure do it for the men is one reason, but do it for the other bigger reasons. And that's what's lacking in this post. And the author's gotten a lot of flack. Also, she has plenty of pictures of her boys in bathing suits in the same post, which is a very odd choice.
Yeah, that's not well
very,
thought
very
out
odd choice
of
for that one.
well, so the sentiment of like women be modest. Yeah, we agree with the idea that it's their fault for like her boys being horny dudes. No, not with it. Sorry.
And the other funny thing, and I'd love to hear everyone's thoughts on this. I feel like our listeners are the types who agree sort of with my assessment of this, but this has been going around in Mormon circles, and I've seen many people post this article and just say like, amen, this is great. I'm a young parent, and I think this is wonderful. And yeah, I want to teach my daughters, assuming I have daughters, to be modest and do it for the right reasons, but you know, I don't want them just to, I'm not going to tell my daughters, don't do this because men are douches. I'm going to say, don't do this because if you do, I'm not going to let you go on your date because you're not going to look like a hussy.
I'll kill you.
Yeah. But another funny thing is there's a post that she's since taken down from 2 years ago and about when she first met her husband in college and how he was leaning out of his shirt without his shirt on. And the awkward thing is she took recreative photos here of her husband today in black and white without a shirt on, kind of looking out a photo out the window.
Hey, that's what gets you married, Jeff. I've said for a long time, if it wasn't for sex, no one would ever get married. They would just be best friends.
But it's pretty
forever.
Comical because she goes on talking about basically how she still looks upon this initial encounter with much fondness 20 years on or whatever it's been, which really does sort of throw away half the points she was trying to make in this other post. It's just, so that's all.
Yeah, well, poor her. We one-third agree with her. Okay. Let's see. A couple of quick other ones that I think are interesting for discussion. We'll skip some of these.
Okay.
There's a Mormon mom who's asking if, she wants medical marijuana for her sick son. So are we okay with this?
I am.
Medical marijuana taken by, let's say, pill, or even if it was prescribed to be smoked.
Or a brownie.
Is it okay?
This is the debate. I think a pill form is less controversial because I don't believe you actually get much of a high off of it or anything. It's just the medical benefits. Obviously, if you smoke it, there are adverse effects. But you could so easily argue, yeah, but when I take morphine in the hospital, there are adverse effects.
Even morphine would be or Oxycontin, right?
Any of those.
It's an illegal drug if abused.
Yeah, I mean, opium. Yeah, whatever else. Exactly. And so it's a very interesting gray area right now because marijuana has been illegal, but if it's legalized for medicinal purposes, does that mean, as Latter-day Saints, if your doctor says, I want to give this to you, it's going to help you with your nausea?
It's a really interesting question to me because there's no official stance, right? You're not going to go to your bishop and say, can I do this? And he's going to say one way or the other. Yeah. This is going to be an individual thing.
But you know, what do you do if your doctor says, uh-huh, "Well, great, I want you to have a glass of wine to help with antioxidants for your heart."
And well, if you're Joseph Smith, you say no.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. You could easily say no, but that might be because there are other options. It's very
but marijuana.
Yeah, I don't have an answer. It's very, very fuzzy right here, and I know.
I
would love to know what people think about this because I do not have a fully formed opinion about this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I agree with you, though, when you say a pill form seems fine with me. A doobie form seems less fine. And I'm not sure why, but it does. Like, I feel like it would set a weird precedent for me as a, you know. I just could not imagine being feeling good about myself.
When the doctor's like, smoke two of these, call me in the morning.
And I'm like, man, I got glaucoma, bro. Trying to fix the eyes.
It's a good question, Al. It's a very good question. Going back to the website, Rational Faiths, I believe we talked about part one of this series before, but here we are once again on Book of Mormon Fashion. And this is good for a laugh. Look this over. It's humorous. Because why is it, there are many things they point out, but why is it that everyone who depicts, who are the artists who do Book of Mormon depictions, famous pictures we've seen, ones from the primary manuals, whatever they may be, what is the one common fashion accessory that every Nephite seems to wear, Al?
A headband.
Where did this come from? Did I miss something in 2 Nephi where it mentions that they all wear a headband as a sign of their righteousness? Where did the headband come from? No one knows, and yet it shows up in everything. Everything.
It is interesting. A lot of Native American, any kind of depiction of a Native American almost always has either the soccer style, very thin headband, or the thick with feathers and plumes, big boy headband.
They're always there. I really like the thin ones that are basically I'm blanking on
the hair ties.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the ones that are basically like little lanyards around their head.
Now, here's what I don't understand. I've worn a headband on a number of Halloweens. Those don't stay put very well. Why were all these Indians wearing them, and how were they a functional fashion accessory at the time? How do you get them to stay on? And are you not breaking out feverishly when you wear them? I feel like that sweat And the grime, you know that leather band isn't clean all the time. You got the beadwork. You can't wash that. Just throw it in the river and stone rinse. No, you're wearing this for a long time and letting that build up. That's going to be nasty.
It's so true. Other things mentioned in their reference, of course, mullets. That's another great one. Nephi always has a mullet. Everyone in scriptures apparently had mullets.
He's a strong man.
And we'll let you go look at some of the other ones. I like some of the breakdowns at the end that show, you know, especially from some of the old children's manuals, how Ammon looks like he's wearing a shower curtain. Another guy looks like he's wearing, as the author describes it, a McDonald's-themed cape, which looks like he's going to camp. It's very, very strange. And, of course, the miniskirt that Ammon wears. Ammon's very buff, by the way.
He's a good man. He's a good man.
Man, we're like out of time, and I didn't even get to talk about the sex story.
We'll bring it back next week, and I'll have the forbidden chapter for you.
All right. I was really excited for the sex story, but it can wait a week.
Anyway, yeah, we'll push the rest to the next week. But, Jeff, what a great time we've had this
week. I feel that we have united ecumenically and emotionally.
Like a family.
Well, sort of, yeah.
All right, man. Well, Jeff, have a great week. You know, everybody, you can find us at thisweekinmormons.com. Come leave a comment. You have been. Jeff is writing op-eds. You are welcome to come and debate him. He is a debatable man.
That's a very interesting way of describing it.
Also, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/thisweekinmormons.
At The Real Twim on Twitter. At The Real Twim on Pinterest. Twim Mormons on YouTube. And of course, look out for Sunday School Bonanza, where we bring you gospel doctrine insights and just go over some of those lessons. We're wrapping up the year here pretty soon. And of course, as we mentioned before, please sign up for our mailing list and our gospel study sesh. We promise it will be worth your while. We've had very, very good feedback from people so far.
It will be wonderful. All right. Cool, man.
Al is gone. Go clean that stinky milk.
Yes, sir.
Okay. See you, everyone. Buddy. Bye, Al. Thanks for listening to Twim. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Porcupine pie, porcupine pie, porcupine pie. Vanilla soup, a double scoop, please. No, maybe I won't, maybe I won't, maybe I will.